Welcome to Season 3 of the UK Virtual School Podcast with your host, Sid, educational disruptor and founder of the first online school that dares to be different. Our third season marks the end of the third academic year, where we interview parents, students and teachers who are part of the UK Virtual School family. If you are new to our podcast, please do check out the golden gems from seasons 1 and 2. Now, this podcast is for homeschoolers, home educators, world schoolers, and those parents seeking for an alternative that is effective, flexible, and high quality. If this sounds like you, why not join us in disrupting education as we know it and creating a legacy of learning that's full of passion and enthusiasm. Welcome to the UK Virtual School Podcast. Welcome, guys, to another podcast at UK Virtual School. So I'm Sid here, and I've got the amazing Worldviews teacher, Eloise, and we're going to be exploring Worldviews in today's podcast. So Eloise has been teaching Worldviews for the last 2 years. We're going into our third year now. And prior to that, she was teaching primary English and maths, I think you were, right? So welcome, Eloise.
Hi, everybody.
So let's have a chat. Before we start talking about Worldviews, let's have a chat about you as a person and what kind of got you into teaching and how your experience at UK Virtual School has been so far.
I got into teaching, well, after I left university. It's just something that I've always wanted to do, really. I always had a really positive time at school, really enjoyed it. So it's sort of, I wanted to kind of, I don't know, relive those years, I guess, be back at school and, you know, making other children enjoy their learning experience as well. Then I moved into online teaching after lockdown. So we just come back from traveling. We'd spent about 18 months traveling around Europe in our camper van. We came back, lockdown had happened, and I was looking for a bit of a change of direction. So that's where I found UK Virtual School and haven't really turned back since.
I know, you've been with us for, I think, 3 years now, right?
Yeah, 3 years. Yeah, a long time.
And we're going into our fourth year. So you're like one of our longest staff members, you and Elizabeth, right?
Yeah, this is it. So, we're enjoying it.
So what about your transition between teaching primary English and maths to then going into Worldviews? Like, did you think I was mad when I told you about Worldviews initially?
Yes, I suppose. It was an amazing idea and a good opportunity to kind of take it as my own and kind of develop it from there, which was quite exciting, and just come up with different ideas, and it seemed to be the right sort of fit for the class as well, which I liked. You know, I'm quite hands-on. I like, you know, making things, so sometimes I try to incorporate that into some of my lessons, and I know some of the kids like that as well, making the odd crafty bit here and there, different cultures and stuff. So I think this month is Canada, so we're going to have a go at making a dream catcher out of a paper plate.
That's pretty cool. So for the audience that's listening that doesn't know or doesn't understand what Worldviews is, how would you sum it up?
We look at one country a month in loads of detail. So it's all age appropriate depending on, you know, which class they're taking. We look at history, the cultures, tradition, folk tales, animals. They always love learning about the different animals and things like that. And then some things that are just, you know, unique to each country as well that stand out. To be fair, I mean, I'm learning so much. You know, I'll be teaching the kids and telling them a fact, and I'll be like, I only learned this at the weekend. Like, I didn't know this. And yeah, so I'm certainly broadening my own horizons. So hopefully I'm broadening theirs as well, becoming, you know, world citizens.
It's become such a popular subject over the years. I remember the idea when we first started it, and we only had a couple of kids sign up initially. And it's grown into one of our key subjects now. It's seen on par with our core subjects, I believe, because encompasses so many things within it. What's been your your most interesting research find over the last 2 years? Because we're going into our third year now. So you've done 20 countries so far. What's been the most fascinating one?
I did like Japan. I have to say, I really liked Japan. I mean, I could have kept going. I think that was one of, we were still doing like 15 sessions, but there's the odd country where you could just keep going. Yeah, sometimes I could have another month on them because there's so much information. But Japan was really cool. Their different festivals that they had, their culture. It was amazing learning about, I think it's Hachi, the dog. So there was a dog that would wait every day at the train station and stuff like that. That was very sweet. I liked learning about him. Sumo wrestling, which I just thought was a sport, but there's so much more to it. Yeah, it's quite a spiritual thing as well.
You've made me really fascinated. Tell us about the dog.
Oh, so it's Hachi. He was a dog. He would wait at the train station every day for his owner. And then one day his owner passed away, but he still every single day for years afterwards would still go and wait at the train station waiting for his owner, who would never come back. So a bit like Greyfriars Bobby, if you know that tale.
No,
from Scotland.
I don't.
You don't know that one? We covered that one in our Scotland as well. It's basically the same story, but a different dog. But I just, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
You love your dogs, right?
I do love my dogs. I have got a soft spot. Yeah, we did have to have a whole lesson on Greyfriars Bobby because of, yeah. But I think they enjoyed it as well.
And what about the sumo wrestling? So is it not just a sport?
So much more than that. So but when they're preparing to do sumo wrestling, they will bless the court with salt. There's a bit of a ceremony that takes place. And then for sumo wrestlers, they will stay in their outfits, not the sumo wrestlers. They have a special kimono that they wear. And they will wear that their whole life, their whole career. They have their hair long and in a bun. And that's a really integral part of their tradition as well. And then when they retire, then they will ceremoniously cut it off as well. So again, I thought it was just a sport, but there is so much to it.
Yeah, it sounds it. There's so many interesting facts that you're probably learning every month. And then the beauty of it is you get to, while they're still fresh with you, you get to share them with the kids.
Yeah, this is it. My husband always knows what month we're learning about because I'll be like, did you know that?
So Japan's been one of your top countries. What other country kind of made you curious? Like you learned so many different things that you didn't know about it besides Japan. Because Japan, you said you had a lot of content left. But was there something else that made you slightly curious about that particular country that you might visit now?
What, to go back? I'm trying to think.
No, actually physically visit. Like, is there anything that you want to go and see as a result of kind of exploring these countries?
Well, when we looked at Kenya, we learned about the Maasai tribe that was over there. And like, on doing my research about them, I learned about how their completely different way of life, but they really invite people to come and see their way of life. And they like tourists to come and see. And, that would be quite an experience, I think, to go and actually meet the Maasai tribe, see how they live and experience their culture firsthand.
That'd be a good one. So we're going from Japan to Kenya. What about somewhere in Europe? Was there anything fascinating that you found from studying any of the European countries?
I really liked Wales because we were going to do our Wales trip, but we still kept on and did it anyway. And I thought, are the kids going to, it's one of the smaller ones. It's not got, as compared to Japan or China or Kenya, but really took me by surprise, actually. Some of the traditions, learning about Welsh love spoons. It's a bit like Valentine's Day as a tradition. So when you find your one true love, their way of expressing it is by carving these really intricate love spoons out of wood, and each different symbol represents something else. So like the number of children that they'd like to have, everlasting love, those sorts of things. And then they'd give those and they're passed down through generations. I'm big into my spoons as well. I collect those.
You're going to develop some new interests now after like finding out about different countries. The carvings and the symbols that they use, Have you seen similarities across other symbols used across the world? Like, are you starting to see patterns across certain countries, or are they so distinct in their culture?
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes you can definitely see links from different countries, especially like if they, somebody's there for the whole year, it's quite nice to actually be like, oh, do you remember this in September? And we looked at these use of these style of artwork or this folktale where this happens. We're seeing this kind of like the, the Russian version of it or the Aboriginal version of it. So you're definitely helping. I can see the link. So hopefully the children are starting to see, you know, these similarities of a wider world, really. Yeah, so it's not just what's different, but it's what's the same as well.
As we start to explore more and more, we probably find more similarities in some of the differences that we pick out. Because where you were talking about the love spoons, it made me think of Morocco, because we're visiting Morocco this year, right, for one of our residential trips. And the Amazighan culture, they have tattoos. Well, they used to, like, it was a very traditional thing. They had tattoos that represented when they got married, how many kids they had, similar to what you were talking about. And I wonder whether the symbols are similar or whether they're completely different. So I think that that kind of stuff is really fascinating.
Same with the rug weaving as well. So they not only put it on their body, but yeah, they also put it on their rugs as well. And it's just a single rug could be telling the tale of one woman's life, because it's the women who do the weaving. So it's all about like the female expression. So that's really nice as well.
What about going to America, North and South America? Was there any country there that kind of stood out for you?
Mexico, definitely Mexico. I mean, I love Mexican food anyway. So, I mean, I was going in slightly biased, but yeah, that was really fun. We had to go.
I think there's a bias everywhere. There's the dogs and the spoons and now the food.
But yeah, we learned about Mexican wrestling, had a go at making our own masks. They did an awesome job of that, designing their own wrestlers. What else did we do? Oh, we learned about the Day of the Dead as well. So some of them designed their own sugar skull mask, but then the older ones looked at like a nicho. It's a tiny little window that is then decorated, that is then used to decorate grave sites. And they're all of different figurines as well, love hearts as a way of showing their remembrance for their loved ones.
It's really fascinating how like cultures have their own things that they do and how they express that. And then this year you're doing 10, so those are 20 countries that we've already done. And this year you're doing, let's go through the 20. So I remember the first year because I used to talk about them a lot. So we did South Africa, Egypt, Greece, China, Japan, India, Turkey, England, Scotland, Jamaica in the first year. I know it at the back of my hand because the amount of times when I spoke to people and I was like, this is all the countries we've done. But I have no idea what you covered in the second year. I know French was on there and I know Morocco was there. And I think you did Australia and New Zealand?
Australia, we did Kenya.
Did you do New Zealand?
No, that's this year.
Okay, Wales, so that's five. What are the five other ones? Let's see if we can test you now.
Australia, Brazil, France, Iceland. Yes, that was a good one. Kenya, Mexico, Morocco, Russia, Thailand, and Wales.
Wow, that's a big mix there. That's 20 countries already, and then we've got 10 new ones this year. Is there anyone in particular that's standing out for you that you can't wait to get started with?
I'm really interested in Mali, looking at this year. So,
oh, Mali's a good one. It's got so much history in there.
Yeah, this is it. So, and it's Mansa Musa, who I'm looking at with the kids, who's like the richest person in history who's ever lived and things like that. So he'll be a really good one to look at their architecture, the style of buildings that they have. That one.
Their university, well, what month are you covering that in?
I want to say May.
Okay, so it's much later on in the year. The university there, I think it housed something like, because I remember doing some research on it years ago, and I was so fascinated because the version of Africa that we are taught is that it doesn't have a rich history, it doesn't have scientific discoveries, it's very backward. But when you actually research Africa, it is so rich in its resources. It's got such a rich culture in academia. And they had one of the first universities. I know Morocco, a woman set up a university there, but Mali in particular had Timbuktu University, and I think it housed something like 25,000 students a year, something like that. Don't quote me, like, this is years ago that I researched, but it was something ridiculous. And their degrees were like 10 years long, because every student had to learn about philosophy and science and maths. And I was like, oh my God, like, these were the polymaths of the past, where they had to be experts in all of these fields so they could understand the world better. There was so much literature that was unfortunately lost and burnt when Mali was colonized. But there's a story that a lot of that is still hidden in people's homes, and they don't want it to be discovered because they're not comfortable with sharing it in case it gets burnt and lost. So there's still a rich history in Mali that we don't know about because of these hidden scriptures. But I'm assuming the people in Mali know about this, and they keep these hidden for a good reason, because they don't want us interfering. But it's so fascinating that all over these centuries and years, we've lost all of this knowledge because of warfare and because of colonization. And even with Egypt, we have no idea how they've built the pyramids.
Yeah, that's still all these, you know, we can guess, but even still, we'll still never truly know. The world has all these ancient discoveries still to uncover. So yeah, I do like looking at like the historical side of these countries and the indigenous people as well, like sort of like Australia, looking at their, like, the indigenous people's history and how their cultures all through their artwork as well. And there's places in Australia where the Aboriginals will still draw over their ancestors' pictures, because that's what's been going on for those thousands of years. They're still, it's there. It's almost like their version of a cathedral over there. So, and I'm looking forward to Canada's this month as well, seeing what their history has to offer.
Is there a lot of history in Canada? Because I remember meeting a Canadian, and he was just so fascinated about how all the historical buildings are in Europe, because they don't, that their building structure is not that old, right? From what I heard from him, like, it's a fairly new country. And
yeah it is, but yeah, so it's more like the indigenous people, so they've got like the First Nations and the Inuit groups of people. So I'll be looking really about their belief systems and culture and traditions and how that looks in the modern world as well.
Are there any like old buildings in Canada that came up in your research?
I think there's a walled city. So there is, I think Canada has the only walled city in North America. I can't remember which one it is. I want to say Quebec, but don't quote me on that one. It could be. So yeah, it's the only one come from when colonization happened. They set that up. But other than that, yeah, they are more modern day cities.
It's really fascinating, right? Because sometimes we take the architecture around us for granted. And some of the architecture that we have in the UK is quite old compared to other places in the world where the cities are fairly new. Like Dubai is brand new, right? 50 years ago, it was kind of set up and it turned into a city. But then places like London, we've got buildings that are hundreds and hundreds of years old.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, the odd church here or there that's like from Norman time that we don't think anything of, but actually, you know, that's a thousand years old.
And it's still standing. And yet, like, some of the new builds that we have can't even withstand like 50 years of wear and tear. It's fascinating. And so looking at all of these kind of different countries, does it often leave questions as well unanswered that you can't find answers to? Like, for example, Egypt, we don't know how the pyramids were built. Are you seeing more and more as you research that there's lots of things that we don't know about certain countries?
Yeah, and kids are very good at coming up with some of those big questions. And I'll be like, I have to always write them down and be like, I can't answer that now. I'm going to have to get back to you. You've given me homework, which they always seem to like giving me homework, going to research it. And I always do try and get them thinking about it. And if there is any questions that they do want me to find out about, then, you know, I try to plan a whole lesson about it, or even include it as best as I can. Because, they could sometimes come out with things that, you know, we as adults don't think of ourselves.
So is there anything in particular that you remember that you just couldn't find the answer to, even when you looked?
And, off the top of my head, I'll think of it later. I'll be like, oh, that was it.
That's pretty good. Like, there's nothing that's kind of at the back of your head going, oh, niggling feeling, I still don't know it yet. So you're able to find most things. That's pretty cool. And then on the flip side, you also do time travel, which is looking at the past, present and future on a particular theme. And we've done that for a year now, and we thought we'd run out of themes. And then we came up with like loads of new ones this year. And one of the ones is tools and machinery. So how is that going along? Because you've had your first session so far. So what's your plan in how you're taking that course forward?
Yeah, so the first lesson we had, we looked at prehistoric tools, thinking about what our ancestors used when there's literally nothing around. Like if you had no plastic bags, no shops to go and get anything from, you didn't even have cutlery or clothes to wear, where would you start at getting everything you need? So we've looked at that, had a look at a few some tools from around the world, saw a map in it, an interactive map that got you to, you could see the different tools that human beings were using. And again, there's those similarities, you know, that you see them in Asia, in Europe, in Africa, where we had the same idea wherever we were, which is really interesting.
Do you think it was a case of the same idea, or do you think it was knowledge being transferred? I guess we're not going to know, but what do you personally think?
I don't know. There's something in it, isn't there? Definitely, that this transfer of knowledge, whether it's the similar idea, but then, you know, you had agriculture that was growing up in two different continents at this stage independently. These ideas were coming out at similar time periods as well.
How do you know they were independent, right? We're never going to know that if we don't, because there's no written record either, so we don't really know for sure.
Yeah, I think it's from looking at like the when the continents had split up. So I think in like the Americas, and then like over in like the Mesopotamia region, it's that sort of, they were definitely separate at that time, but then agriculture is emerging. And that's what we're looking at next time. We're going to have a go at making an Egyptian shadouf, an irrigation tool. So it was what the Egyptians were using to get water out of the River Nile, essentially. So see how that goes. But, you know, I think, you know, it's about seeing it for themselves as opposed to just looking at a picture of it.
I think that'll be really nice, because when we go to Morocco, we're going to be looking at hopefully some irrigation work network when we're going to the Sahara Desert, so we'll be able to see it in real life. That's going to be really fascinating. What are you looking forward to when we go to our first residential trip to Morocco?
I'm so excited. It's the Sahara Desert. I think that's what I'm most excited for, just because I've never seen a desert, not properly. I saw the desert in Spain, but it's not quite the same.
Does Spain have a desert?
It does, yeah. Spain has the Tabernas Desert in the south. It's the only desert in Europe.
Is it very far south?
Yeah, it's in Andalusia, so which is right in the southern parts, but it's not got sand dunes and things like that. It's just technically a desert, but I'm looking for seeing like the sand dunes, and yeah, I think that's going to be a memorable experience. So.
And the annoying thing is, you can't capture the beauty of the night sky on a camera. So unless you're there and you experience it, you can't really share that moment with anyone else, because if you try turning your camera on, it just doesn't have the power to be able to pick up the night sky.
Yeah. So seeing that, and we learned about animal tracks as well. So I'll be looking forward to seeing if I can spot any beetle tracks while I'm there.
And freaking yourself out because you'll realise there's so many animals in the desert with you.
I'm not alone, but yeah.
So that was cool. Was there anything in particular when you researched about Morocco, because you did that last year with the kids, was there anything that fascinated you that has you completely intrigued to see it in real life?
Seeing the Amazigh people, their way of life as well, like I always just thought they were called Berbers, and that's just what is passed down or what you're told. But actually looking into it, that's not what they like to be called. That's not their name at all. That's not their given name. That's what somebody's what's been around for hundreds of years. But just seeing how their way of life, their culture, how that survived, and it's actually seeing some of the rug making in that And it's just such a colourful country, isn't it?
Oh yeah, your senses are just like overstimulated. But the rug making is just, they're so quick at it. I think you're going to be super fascinated because we'll have a go at doing the rug making, but the women are so talented in what they do. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see it. And I think the beauty of education and learning is when you can go and see these things in real life and still be awed by it. But when you research beforehand and you go with a little bit of knowledge about something and then you see things, I think you appreciate things at a whole new level that you didn't before. So I love the fact that we've done worldviews on Morocco at the end of last year, and now they're going to go and experience it. And even those kids that didn't do it, they can always watch the video recordings and catch up on that content. But then to be able to go and see it in action, it's just going to be a whole new level of learning for them.
Yeah, I know, it's exciting. Really exciting. So I hope to learn even more while I'm there as well.
So you've mentioned a couple of countries that have really inspired you. So Greece has been coming up as the next place that we're going to be visiting. But do you think, in your opinion, where should we visit after Greece?
Well, anywhere in the world. Where's it would be? That's a good question. You know, Germany is actually quite a beautiful country. I've been to Germany and that was always one that kind of took me by surprise. You know, it's mountains and lakes and people and the architecture. And that's a really beautiful country. Or South Korea. I'd be always quite intrigued to see that. It'd be quite a cool one as well. We are looking at South.
We haven't covered either of those yet.
Both of those are actually this year, but that's not why I said them, actually. definitely. Yeah, South Korea is one of those. That was actually a student's suggestion last year that they wanted to cover it this year. And South Korea, yeah.
It's going to take us around 20 years to cover all the countries in the world, and then you'll be like a walking atlas. If you're still with us in 20 years time, Eloise.
Imagine, I'll know where every country is in the world. Yeah, it'll be brilliant.
And I guess you've got a personal passion because you love traveling.
Yeah. So it's something that we did in our camper van. So yeah, we spent 18 months going around Europe. I think we did 17 countries.
Wow.
Did a fair few. And only the van only broke down once in that whole time. So that wasn't bad going. The only problem was it was during Christmas time in Spain and everything shuts down for like 2 weeks. But yeah, it's part of the experience.
So has this given you like the itch to get into your camper van again and maybe go a little bit further afield?
Going down to like Turkey and Greece, around there. Turkey was amazing. I was blown away by Turkey. Actually, that's definitely somewhere I'd like to go back. Well, go and see, because it's, you think of Istanbul, but actually going into the main body of it, there's loads of really cool and beautiful sites in there. So Cappadocia, I don't know if I'm saying it right, Cappadocia, that one looks really cool. It's the fairy chimneys, as they're called, which were
the rock formation there is beautiful. It just looks like something out of a made-up movie where they've used Photoshop to create it, but it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So around there, and Greece as well. So, you know, it's just,
but Turkey like sits on its own plate, right? Its own, what are they called? Tectonic plate,
yeah. And it's like partly in Europe and Asia. I think Istanbul is like half and half in it.
It's really fascinating. I think it's what intrigues me the most is that you can be in the same country, but as you move through it, the climate changes so much, and the nature changes so much, and what's around you changes so much, right? So Turkey is one of those, but even Morocco, going from the north to the south of Morocco is completely different, because the countries are so big. Like, we don't see that big of a difference going from one end of England to another. But then I guess you can when you go to Scotland and Wales, because that's very different from England. So I guess there is that in the UK as well. But those countries in particular, I think there's so much difference in between like one end to the other, and in between as well.
Yeah, like with Morocco, it's got the Atlas Mountains there, and that's basically the buffer zone between the north and the Sahara Desert, like encroaching onto it. helps to keep the rest of it a bit more milder.
And you think Morocco is hot, but the Atlas Mountains, you've got snow on the tips pretty much all year round, right?
Yeah, so because of the altitude, and then like just not that far away is the Sahara Desert. So.
Yeah, I think it's been fascinating kind of hearing some of your insights on the different countries, and time travel equally is exciting and something that we're looking at expanding. And I think you're looking at beauty and perception this year, and then universe and astrology, which I think are going to be equally fascinating topics to kind of dig deeper and delve into. How has the experience been at UKVS for you?
Yeah, it's been brilliant, actually. Yeah, you know, coming into online learning, online teaching wasn't something I'd done before, but I think it seemed quite new to everybody at that time. They're like for the children and the teachers. And yeah, it's kind of just gone from strength to strength. I'm more confident in, you know, my technology skills and things like that, and yeah, I've just really enjoyed it. It's quite nice, you know, working from home, you've got everything there that you need. It's quite nice to go and get a cup of coffee when you want to. That it's a lot less stressful as well. So, and you know, and I think, you know, for the children as well, you know, they, you know, they even seem a lot more relaxed because they're in their own environment as well, you know, and you really start to see them come out their shells and build some good relationships with them.
And the irony is that they're in their homes, yet they're getting to experience the entire world from their laptops, right? It's really it's really interesting. And it's, I think your worldviews are such a beautiful subject, and it unites so many people from across the globe, especially our world schooling families that travel around and they get to share what they've been learning with you.
Yeah, we've had some families, especially when we looked at Mexico, we had a family that had been to Mexico not that long, traveling, and they were like able to kind of, before I'd be able to say it, they'd be like, oh, they've got this there. I'm like, yes, we're going to be learning about that. So, but it's great to actually have someone who's got this first-hand experience, who can, and they can tell their classmates about it. Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Eloise. I found it really fascinating, and I've learned so many new facts about different countries, and I'm sure the audience has as well. So if people are on the edge of like not knowing whether to sign up to Worldviews, what would you say to them? How would you lure them into?
How would I lure them in? Well, yeah, it's one of those subjects that, you know, it's something for everybody, whether you're somebody who's interested in history, whether you're a little bit arty, or you just like learning facts. It's something that kind of unites all of the kids as well. If you're, and it's broadened their horizons as well. We don't just learn about the ones that you expect. You know, I do deliberately try to choose countries from every continent, so they are getting that spread and diversity as well.
It's fascinating that the parents pick up on so much, because the kids will talk to their parents at home about all of these different things they've learned. And so it's not just the kids that are learning, the parents and the family is also learning alongside them. And it's project-based, because I remember when you did South Africa, and one of their homeworks, and I tell a lot of families this, like one of their homeworks was to cook a South African dish, to taste it and to talk about it in the next lesson. So there's that diversity of activities that you bring to the table as well, which I think are amazing. And yeah, so guys, if you're on the fence, I think give it a shot. Like, you can trial it out for a month and see how you find that one country. But equally, if you can't do the times, there's also video content that you can go back to. Thank you so much, Eloise, for sharing that with us.
No, thank you. That's nice talking to you.
Brilliant. I'll speak to you soon, guys. Bye. Thank you so much for tuning into the UK Virtual School podcast with your host, Sid. I look forward to having you join me again soon. In the meantime, if you're considering online schooling to take away the stress of having to plan and structure everything yourself, why not head over to our website, www.ukvirtualschool.com. You can join in our next online open day or book in a Zoom meeting with me to discuss options. I look forward to seeing you soon. Bye.